Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're here to talk about the issues that impact our lives. Every day, people from all over the world tune in for the first time. The whole point of the exercise is to provide insights and information that will allow people to make more reasoned and humanistic, spiritual, practical, and pragmatic decisions. We talk a lot about health and nutrition, but also the environment. We're going to talk about the environment today. In fact, I'll give you some new information about how the oil industry suppressed, with malice aforethought, all of climate science that revealed that we were in a non-sustainable condition and there'd be consequences to pay. How far back did this go? How long ago were they made aware of how bad it is? Well, according to Common Dreams, the 1940s. Wow. And also from Health and Nutrition, we're going to talk about how the low-carb diet slows the growth of aggressive brain tumors, and that's from University of Florida. We're also going to explore how climate change threatens nutrients essential for human health from Ryerson University in Canada, and how low selenium levels, and that's easy to get selenium, it's not difficult, will lead to higher cancer risk from the Danish Cancer Society, and how mushrooms lower our PSA in prostate cancer. Wow, mushrooms help you with your prostate. So here's the deal. If mushrooms would do this in a person with prostate cancer, shouldn't we also imagine that it could help us prevent that same prostate inflammation, which can lead to prostate cancer? I'll share that. And then also today, in which blueberries and strawberries reduce cognitive impairment in older adults, older over 50. So how many people are we talking about? Recognized medically, 16 million in the United States. More realistically, 30 million. And it's not just older people because of poor lifestyles. And more on health and healing. Then from our audio department, Smoke and Fumes, an introduction to the deep history of oil and climate change. So these are some of the issues we're taking on. All important. Let's begin. Let's start with the idea that all of us want to live a longer life, or most people do, certainly. And we've had these high-protein, low-carb diets, no-fat diets, and they simply don't work. They're all, in my personal opinion, primary causes of disease. And the architect of one of those was a longtime friend of mine. We shared some things in common, but we shared a completely different approach when it came to nutrition. He was Dr. Robert Atkins and had the most successful diet book in American history. Millions and millions of copies sold. And why? Because people loved the idea they didn't have to give up bad foods, their favorite foods. We once ate at an Indian restaurant in Manhattan, and he had all the meat dishes, and I had the vegan dishes. And I said, do you want to try these curry chickpeas, this dal soup? No, he was happy with his meat. Of course, he's dead. And a lot of the people who advocated or participated in a high-fat, high-protein diet have suffered diseases, heart disease, cancers, inflammatory disease, because cooked meat, no matter who you are, what your age, or what your status of health, every single time, no exceptions, not one single exception, when you eat anything like meat that is cooked, you're creating a pro-inflammatory cytokine. That's simply the reality. Now, how well your body responds to it, how much damage is done, that's a different story. It's like, well, you can have a little poison, just don't have too much. But if you have a little poison that accumulates, lead, mercury, mercury in your fillings, mercury in flu vaccines, won't there be a point where then it tips and you end up with neurological problems because it's neurotoxic? Yes, but we don't want to talk about that now. We just want what we want. So people who want these high-protein diets, or people who want their meat and want their barbecued ribs and want their fried chicken and want their their pizzas with the dead meat that never rots on it, the pastrami, you are paying a price for it. Inevitably, everyone. So now they came up with this research showing that a low-carb diet slows aggressive brain tumors. This is University of Florida. Quote, University of Florida health researchers have showed a notoriously aggressive type of brain tumor in this study is impacted by a low-carb diet. Quote, the high-fat, low-carb diet that included a coconut oil derivative helped reduce the growth of a glioblastoma tumor cell and extended lifespan in this model by 50%. This was published in Clinical Cancer Research. Now, the high fat isn't a arachidonic fat from beef or chicken. It's from coconut. Coconut is a good fat, and coconut turns off inflammation. For people who have gastrointestinal problems, if you have ulcers, if you have ileitis, colitis, spastic colon, irritable bowel, Crohn's syndrome, all these are inflammatory. Coconut oil has specific acids that turn off, quench, and heal. By the way, it does the same thing on your skin and even in your hair. If you were to take 1 teaspoon of coconut oil and mix it with 1/2 teaspoon of extra virgin olive oil, then massage your hands together and just massage that into your scalp. It would help with dandruff. It helps with any inflammation on the skin. It helps with keratinized tissue. And it also helps give you really thick and lustreful hair. It's really good. So it helps on the outside of the body, helps on the inside. But the key to low carbs is low refined carbs, meaning get rid of the sugars and the pastries and the candies. That's what it means. Not to give up carbs, because carbohydrates, if they're complex, beans and nuts and seeds and grains, legumes, these are crucial to our health. So, one thing that can help you if you have brain cancer. This is important. I had Professor Guy McPherson, arguably one of the brightest people on climate change, and he does not mince words. He does not compromise on truth. He doesn't care about ideology. He's simply going to tell you what the actual models are showing, and there are some disastrous consequences happening because of it. And it's his impression that climate change is so bad right now, as we speak, that up to 300 million climate refugees are in Africa alone. That's just in Africa. And expected to be 600 million in the next year or two. Now, we just went through refugees going into Greece and into Italy and Germany, other countries, upwards of about 2 million. They came from a man-made disaster, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, NATO disaster, the neocon disaster, the people who love war at Fox disaster in Libya and in Syria and in Yemen. That's where they fled. But they had resources. They're highly educated. They were close to Europe and the southern Mediterranean, so they made that venture, as risky as it was. What are you going to do with 300 million people who don't have the education, don't have the resources, don't have any money, dirt poor? Well, the problem is they're just going to die. How many people are dying right now? 27,000 every 24 hours. That's what happens when you don't have water, you don't have clean water, you have mosquitoes, you're malnourished, you have infections, you die. And are we paying any attention to it? Not one word written in the media. Nowhere. Alternative or mainstream. So what happens when these people are forced to migrate? They'll go wherever they can, and when you get enough people congregated in one place who have no resources, you're going to have a flashpoint. So this is what I was talking with Guy McPherson about, was that when you talk about the economy and where we're going with our economy, you cannot leave out of the equation what happens when the soil is so hot that seeds don't germinate. That's happening right now in Kansas, Illinois, and some of our breadbasket states. What happens when you don't have water in most of California, at least 80% of California, where there's zero water? Well, like the cantaloupe capital of the world for 50 years, they're not growing any cantaloupes, but they still got 12,000 people who don't have any work. Nothing's growing. Millions of trees are being torn down, fruit trees, olive trees, avocado trees, apricot trees, peach trees in California because there's no irrigation. So you just see bulldozers just ripping everything out of the ground. We don't see it because when we want an apple or an apricot, we can go to the store and find one. Because somewhere in America or in South America or in Mexico or right now, grapes coming from South Africa. And so someone will grow it at some point. But what happens if you have an increasing population that wants these foods? Well, then you got to either A, inflation on the value of the things you're selling them. So the price of these commodities go up because there's a greater demand than the supply. And therefore, the market forces the price up. Or you end up having to resolve that you don't need these items anymore, and you start buying locally grown things, and you create a local economy, which is the wise thing to do. You can grow strawberries, blueberries, blackberries year-round in hydroponics if you choose to, and that's the future. Mark my words. More Americans will be buying their produce from hydroponics in the next 10 years than ever imagined. We're talking about tens of millions because that's the future. You don't have to worry about how hot or cold or the soil or insects. And it's starting. And it's actually, the impetus is out there now. But what happens when you're getting low yields? What happens when you have no grain reserves? And right now, America has zero grain reserves. It means that people who historically could afford something, if it wasn't too expensive, can't. And a higher percentage of their disposable income is going for basic food necessities. Now, 60 million Americans don't have to worry about how much they spend on food. They've got plenty of money. But that still leaves over 270 million Americans who don't have. So you got to remember, who's the media writing the talking points for? Who's talking in the media to which group? Are you talking to the middle class, working middle class, lower middle class, the poor class, or the wealthy class, the professional class? One group can afford, the other group can't. One group lives closer to the environment and sees it on a daily basis. The other is completely avoid. They never see a farm. They never see a dead animal. They never see anything. They're in this cocoon. Could they know? They could, and some are. More and more people are using the internet, and that's why many documentaries are thriving on the internet that inform us of this. There's some really outstanding Forks Over Knives, Cowpocracy. These are very important documentaries I highly recommend because they inform us. But when you have land in America in 20 states, it's no longer sustainable. And then you look at most of Europe, non-sustainable. And you look at Egypt, non-sustainable. By the way, Egypt doesn't have a drop of water on its own. It gets it on the rundown from another country. Well, now they're in a big battle because that other country is damming up the water. So look for conflicts over water. And half of Africa doesn't have the soil quality, and so you have major dust storms. So how in the world can any responsible person say that we're doing great when they're not looking at the people in the world who are not and are going to get a lot worse? So things are going to get worse, but maybe it takes a natural disaster like a Katrina or Sandy before we pay attention. And keep in mind, Katrina, as bad as it was only a Category 3 when it hit. And Sandy was a Category 1. With rising sea temperatures, you're going to get Category 5s hitting. What will Category 5 do if it hit New York, New Jersey? Probably upwards of $500 to $1 trillion in damage. Probably in the neighborhood of, maybe a million people displaced from their homes. Who's going to rebuild then? So pay attention. These are important facts. So now what we're seeing is, the climate threatens the nutrients in the soil. This is from Ryerson University. Quote, essential fatty acids such as EPA and DHA are vital to the health of all vegetables, with a direct relationship to cardiovascular and immune system health, as well as neurological function, vision, and reproductive. New research from Ryerson University shows that climate warming may have a significant negative impact on production of these omega-3 acids in algae, which may lead to cascading effects throughout the world's ecosystems, culminating in an overall decline in the global availability of these nutrients for human well-being. In lay language, what it's saying is the sun is heating up the oceans. It's killing algae, which then adversely affect fish. For example, sardines are what a lot of the mammals eat, sea lions and walruses. Well, they're decimated in the Pacific. And as a result, you're seeing tens of thousands of these seals and other mammals, ocean mammals, dying. And you're seeing seabirds die. Huge numbers. But we're not seeing it every day. Maybe occasionally on the news, but there's a thousand other things competing that same day with our attention, so it doesn't register because it doesn't impact us directly that day. Because we can always get something's got omega-3 fatty acids in it. I'm showing you a trend that as it gets hotter and the seasons change, insects that you never had before are going to become major problems. Those same beetles that you don't have to worry about at the higher altitude are now decimating forests by the millions of acres across Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, South Dakota, North Dakota. Yeah, and in California because the heat. The trees have not had time to acclimate to these beetles. So then that leads to more fires. 24/7 capacity year-round for fires. So pay attention to the environment from the soil on because we're going to see it. Now, something we can do that can prevent cancer and we should do is we should be having selenium. It's a micronutrient. You don't need much, 200 micrograms. This is from the Danish Cancer Research Society. Quote, levels of selenium, a mineral essential for good health, are so low in soil that it's affecting the food chain, diets, and ultimately the risk of disease. Low selenium levels may lead to higher risks of cancer. Essential trace mineral selenium has been noted to possess cancer protective effects. The variation in human dietary intake is reflected in the global variation in blood selenium levels. The richest food sources of selenium are Brazil nuts and fish. Of course, there's also garlic and onion. And you can also get it in your cereal grains. Or you can take a selenium supplement or get 200 micrograms in a multiple vitamin. In any case, it helps protect you against cancer. And finally, mushrooms lower the PSA in prostate cancer men. Quote from GreenMed Info, mushrooms add a nice flavor along with nutrients to any dish. Now a phase one clinical study has found that a certain mushroom will reduce PSA levels in men who've had prostate cancer. Now, if you're a man, there is a good chance you could get diagnosed with prostate cancer at some point. About 1 in 7 men will be diagnosed with cancer during their lifetime. And that's a lot of new cases, 220,800 cases last year, and 27,000 men died from it last year. In fact, prostate cancer is the second leading cause of cancer deaths in men, followed by lung cancer. And so here's the deal on the mushroom. This particular mushroom that they used in this experiment was extremely good and non-toxic, and it impacts the immune system. Mushrooms really impact the immune system in a good way. And this reverse prostate enlargement or benign prostatic hyperplasia is enlargement. And the researchers come from Beckman Research Institute and the Department of Medical Oncology and Experimental Therapeutics at the City of Hope National Medical Center in Durant, California. So this is, write this down, Agaricus, A-G-A-R-I-C-U-S, Bisphorus. B-I-S-P-O-R-U-S. It's also referred to as white or button mushrooms. Yeah, I'll bet a lot of you have had those. So keep in mind, you should have those in your diet on a regular basis. Well, I also mentioned blueberries and strawberries reduce cognitive impairment in older adults. True. So I suggest you have a berry every day in your diet, a pint or more, or juice or concentrate. It's all good. And this study found that because the berries are so high in flavonoids and bioflavonoids and anthocyanidins, which provide lots of antioxidants and have anti-inflammatory properties, and remember, cognitive dysfunction, Alzheimer's, stroke, all of these, cancer, diabetes, arthritis, all of these, the underlying cause is inflammation. What you eat causes that inflammation. What you drink causes that inflammation. Coffee, inflammation, highly anabolic. Let's say a hamburger, hot dogs, french fries, inflammatory. So sugar, very inflammatory. Alcohol, extremely inflammatory in any amount. But berries, anti-inflammatory. So the more you shift over to anti-inflammatory, the healthier you're going to be. Now, this was a 275,000 nurses in the Nurses' Health Study, and they looked at these participants over a long period of time, and they found that its official quote, blueberries and strawberries are superfoods that protect the brain. And I know a lot of you are using superfoods and lots of berries. So those of you who've been using your berries, fresh, organic, or frozen, or in concentrates, or most powerful of all, in concentrated powders, that's where you get your greatest benefit. You are on the right side of everything. I'm Gary Noll. That's our health and nutrition segment. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
I only meant to love you. Didn't you know it, babe? Didn't you know it? Why couldn't you be content with the love I gave?
I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world who are joining us. We're on stations all over America, and we're heard in almost every country of the world. Tomorrow, I'm going to do a special on how Hillary and Bill Clinton helped ruin Haiti from the Daily Beast. Also tomorrow, 2,500 years of class hatred about the class struggle never existed without hatred of the poor, nor racism. And we'll talk about how we are a highly class-structured society. Also, the end of the American Empire. And I'll tell you about a special guest we're going to have on tomorrow's program to deal with some very important issues, but that'll be a little later. Now, I want to introduce my guest in a second, but just let you know this, because I mentioned this at the beginning of the program. This is from Common Dreams, quote, "A trove of newly uncovered documents shows that fossil fuel companies were explicitly warned of the risks of climate change decades earlier than previously suspected." And the companies knew about those dangers long ago. The documents published by the Center for International Environmental Law reveal even more about the broader industry effort to suppress climate science and foment public doubt about global warming. Industry executives met in Los Angeles in 1946 to discuss growing public concern about air pollution. That meeting led to the formation of a panel, suitably named the Smoke and Fumes Committee, to conduct research into air pollution issues. But the research was not meant to be a public service. Rather, it was used by the committee to, quote, promote public skepticism of environmental science and environmental regulations the industry considered hasty, costly, and potentially unnecessary. The group continues, quote, "In the decades that follow, Smoke and Fumes Committee funded massive levels of research into an array of air pollution issues, often conducted by institutes fostered by and governed by the oil companies themselves. By the mid-1950s, at the very latest, climate change was one of those issues. The documents also show how Humble Oil, now ExxonMobil, scientists actively engaged on climate science in the company's name beginning in the 1950s, even as they actively funded and published research into alternate theories of global warming." And then when I heard Rush Limbaugh, which is very difficult to do, talking about how there's no such thing as global warming, it's just this conspiracy from the left. No, it's not. And they're spending $500 million a year to prevent us from being aware of its true significance and making changes, demanding those changes of industries that are polluting. That's from our environmental segment. Now, in studio in New York City is Brendan Kelly. Brendan Kelly is the co-founder of Jade Mountain Wellness Center in Burlington, Vermont, where he currently has a Chinese medical practice. And for the past 25 years, Brendan has been nationally involved in environmental issues. He lectures on Chinese medicine, Western herbalism, and personal health, and climate change and sustainability, including at the University of Vermont and Yale and Goddard and other universities. He also teaches at Johnson State College and also at the Academy of Five Element Acupuncture. And he is the author of Yin and Yang of Climate Crisis, Healing Personal, Cultural, and Ecological Imbalances with Chinese Medicine. And his websites are personalasecological.com and jademtwellness.com. Nice to have you with us today, Brendan.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Almost all commentators on global warming and climate change and the crisis in our environment, with few exceptions, put an emphasis on what we do to the environment based upon modern societal factors rather than our internal state of mind and lifestyle habits and practices and the human institutions we create and attach ourselves to. We place blame upon our capitalist economy based upon the illusion that infinite growth and development is sustainable and will enable us to continue with our addicted lifestyles and gadgetry that keeps our minds preoccupied continuously. But if we look at mystical and ancient medical traditions in general, and Chinese medical philosophy in particular, emphasis is always placed upon maintaining a balance between the inner and outer worlds, our inner life and values, and our outer life of activity. And what we witness outside our door when we gaze upon the world or read the news is a reflection of our inner world that we identify as being ourselves. Therefore, when our outer world is sick and ill, which it is an indication of the illness within us as well. It indicates that our way of being in the world is harmful. So if you would please explore this relationship in greater depth, particularly from the standpoint of what Chinese medical philosophy has to offer with respect to the imbalances between yin and yang, lowered cooling and rising heat in our postmodern cultural and civilization, and how what we experience as extreme climate change is reflective of our extreme societal imbalance, and then describe for us in detail what is meant by our society and ourselves living a heating lifestyle that is contributing to both personal unhealthy conditions as well as unhealthy conditions in the environment. The forum is yours.
Thank you. Those are great questions, and questions that I think are vitally important to our own personal well-being, the well-being of our culture, and obviously the well-being of the environment. I very much agree, and I think Chinese medicine historically would also agree, that what's happening in the world around us, what's happening in the environment, what's happening with the climate, really is a reflection, a mirror of what's happening within us. And as you mentioned, almost all of what we hear about with climate change is based on a Western cultural perspective. And that's not inherently bad. There's a tremendous amount of research on what's happening with the climate, and I cite that research in some detail in my book. I think that there is value to that, but what I think climate change is speaking to is not only the imbalances in our culture, but the imbalances within us. And Chinese medicine uses the analogy of roots and branches, and the branches are the symptoms. The branches are, on a personal level, things like headaches and back pain and cancer, etc. And environmentally, the branch that I write about is climate change. And it's not without value to understand that the climate is warming and that we have tremendous amounts of cancer, for example, in our culture. But that's still more of a surface perspective. If you look below the surface to the roots of the issues, from a Chinese medical view, that's where really the cure is. It's not enough to know that the climate is warming. It's not enough to know that we have tremendous rates of cancer, for example, in the U.S. From a Chinese medical view, we need to understand where those things are coming from. And as you mentioned, you know, our culture is fundamentally out of balance. And in looking for the root issues of that, I very much believe that those issues come from the way we see the world. It comes from the stories that we're encouraged to believe, and in many cases, the stories we tell our lives. And looking at those stories from a Chinese medical view, what those stories are about is overvaluing yang, overvaluing stimulation, overvaluing heat, and undervaluing yin, undervaluing quiet and peace and coolant. And I think Chinese medicine has a tremendous amount to offer not only in terms of personal well-being, obviously, it's a medical tradition that's been practiced contiguously for over 5,000 years, but certainly the larger cultural and environmental issues. So what's happening with the climate is that it's warming. There's, as you mentioned, there's been no real debate about that, no serious scientific debate about that for some time, though a lot of people, including the fossil fuel industry, has tried to create that illusion, really, of any kind of scientific debate about that. So the climate is clearly warming, but over the last 10 years or so, what's also been made clear by Western climate science is that the ability of the planet to sequester greenhouse gases, the ability of the planet to maintain coolant has gone down through the loss of forests, through the acidification of oceans, through melting permafrost, etc. So there's now two dynamics that Western climate science describes. The planet is warming, and the ability of the planet to sequester greenhouse gases has gone down, which translates into a decrease in cooling. So what that is happening, how to describe that from a Chinese view, is the heat is going up and the coolant is going down. Well, that's a particular Chinese medical diagnosis. That's the diagnosis of yin deficient heat. Yin is the coolant. Deficiency is a lack of. So yin deficiency is a lack of coolant creating heat. Well, not surprisingly, that is a very, very common diagnosis in our clinic in Vermont. Yin deficient heat, where it's not only a question of heat, which is inflammation internally, but the ability of our bodies to maintain coolant has gone down. And as a result of that, we not only get inflammatory conditions, which you talk about, but those inflammatory conditions are magnified because the body has lost the yin, the coolant. So we live in an era of yin-deficient heat globally. Internally, we have yin-deficient heat. And really, I think without exaggeration, so many of our cultural institutions are based on this same overemphasis of yang and devaluing of yin. Our economic system, for example, we have the belief that continuous expansion is not only possible but desirable. That's clearly, from a Chinese medical view, an excess of yang. Medically, we're encouraged to believe that new things, new procedures, new research is more valuable than older perspectives, for example, than a Chinese medical perspective. So we see the same overemphasis of yang, devaluing of yin within us individually, within our culture, and within the climate. And the relevance of that is one way to address the bigger issues of what's going on in our culture, what's going on to the environment, is really to balance things internally. And to balance yin and yang, I think, is fundamental to that. And so one way to address the big picture of climate change is to balance yin and yang within us. And I think without that balance of yin and yang internally, we have very little, if any, chance of addressing the bigger environmental and cultural issues.
Thank you, Brendan, for the overview. What are some of the more common diseases and illnesses that are increasing that we might find associated with what is occurring in our outer environment, such as more extreme storms, floods, sea level rises, droughts, and dying forests? For example, increased heat or yang is usually associated with inflammation. So in our outer world, how would we understand the climate change symptoms being experienced today as forms of planetary inflammation?
Well, I think one very good example of that, of the inflammation internally, is the rates of cancer. And I write about that in some detail. I have a chapter in my book about the rates
of
cancer.
Okay, but hold on.
Yep.
Brendan, please don't go there. If you have something you've written about, tell us what it is, please. All right, don't say all of my answers are in my book.
Sure.
Give us the information. I want facts and details from you, please.
Sure. Yeah, the rates of cancer are really extraordinary in the United States. According to the American Cancer Society, 1 in 2 men and 1 in 3 women will be diagnosed with cancer in their lifetime. And again, according to the American Cancer Society, 1 in 4 men and 1 in 5 women will die from cancer in their lifetime. So as I see it, cancer is an inflammatory condition. And so that the extraordinary rates of cancer we have in the U.S. are an example of the elevated rates of inflammation that we have. And another part from my work clinically working with people with cancer is that in addition to the heat rising, what allows cancer to grow, or in particular what allows cancer to metastasize, is this lack of yin, that yin keeps things in place, yin keeps things in latency, yin keeps things from moving around the body as the coolant. So I think cancer is a very specific example of within us the amount of heat that we have individually and collectively, and also the loss of yin, the loss of coolant. Now, having said that, there's many, many other conditions, really all inflammatory diseases we can equate with an excess of yang, an excess of heat, and that excess of heat often will cook off the coolant, will cook off the fluids, will cook off the yin. And so that same dynamic of an excess of yang and a deficiency of yin in many, many cases is part of or the predominant diagnosis for all inflammatory conditions. And that's not just physical, but when I say inflammatory conditions, I'm talking about mental and emotional as well. Anxiety, it often comes from heat. Most red, inflamed skin conditions come from heat. Most gastrointestinal issues come from heat in the stomach and the intestines, so irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's disease, etc. I would say that many, many diseases that we have in our country are very much connected to heat, and there's a tradition in Chinese medicine, the heat tradition, the school of heat, that very much emphasizes, assumes that all conditions, not most, but all conditions come from heat, and I think that that's a very accurate way to describe what's happening in our culture and the many, many medical conditions that we have.
As a better understanding from a Western perspective, I view all disease as an imbalance, whether the imbalance is external or internal or combination. And the correction, of course, is creating balance. For example, when you were mentioning heat, when you look at alcohol, that's heat. When that's pro-inflammatory, one of the most inflammatory substances you can take into the body. When you look at meat, that's inflammatory. When you look at berries, berries repair the DNA. Berries are cytokine trappers. They physically trap pro-inflammatory elements. Green tea, that is anti-inflammatory. It's cooling. Lemongrass, cooling. Chamomile, cooling. So when we look at the herbs like ginseng, Dong Quai, Fo Tai, these are herbs that are extremely beneficial as adaptogens to rebalance excesses. If there's excess heat, ginseng can rebalance it. And so we don't use herbs in our society. We don't think of having berries to rebalance the excess of what we've done the night before and maybe overeating or eating fried food. What do you observe as the most destructive assumptions that the average person holds about themselves that is contributing to the rise in runaway climate change? And how is this more of a collective spiritual crisis, if it is, I believe it is, that exists in our society than simply a psychological imbalance of priorities?
I very much believe it's ultimately a spiritual issue. And I think Chinese medicine is very prone towards understanding things that way. When something is fundamentally out of balance, which our culture is, and as a result, as the environment is, the root issue is likely to be a spiritual issue. And however we define that, whether it's a more Western view of spirituality or an Eastern view, the issues are deep. And so I think that's important because in Chinese medicine, there's a real emphasis placed on understanding the level of the condition. And I very much agree that the issue is ultimately spiritual. It's the issues that we have now in terms of health, in terms of cultural issues, environmental issues, really get to the root of things. It gets to things like how we define a good life. It gets to things like how we define good food, how we define live our day. And one way to understand all of that, again, is an excess of yang and a deficiency of yin. So yang is about activity. Yang is about more. Yang is about new. Yang is about loud. Yang is about fast. And we have a cultural assumption that values yang over yin. So another way of saying that is part of the remedy for what ails us individually, culturally, and ecologically is to revalue yin, to revalue the old, to revalue the traditional, the use of herbs, the use of eating whole foods, the value of less. We are encouraged to believe that simply because we have more stuff that we're living a happier and healthier life. And in many cases, it's simply not true. And there's a lot of Western psychological research that's talking about that, that at some point, once you have enough for yourself and your family and you can live a reasonably comfortable life, having more stuff, more material possessions in particular, does not promote health, and it can actually be doing the opposite. So we're encouraged to believe that more stuff is better than less stuff, that things that move fast are better than things that move slow, that the global and the international is better than the local. All of those, one way of understanding all of that is the overvaluing of yang and the undervaluing of yin. And part of the real sadness of all of this is that even if we succeed at having more yang than yin, more new stuff, the fanciest new stuff, living a fast life, even if we succeed at that, which in many ways is how we've defined the American dream, even if we succeed at having more yang than more yin, we're not necessarily happier or healthier. So even for people who succeed at that, that does not in any way mean that they're living a good life. So part of what I think we need to redefine and reimagine is what life is about. And I think in Chinese medicine, as you alluded to, it's ultimately about balance, balancing yin and yang, balancing activity and rest, balancing the new with the old, balancing the internal with the external. And the level of sickness in our culture, the level of imbalance in our culture, and the level of imbalance in the environment speaks to the fundamental imbalance, the fundamental sickness, really at all levels in our culture.
I appreciate those insights. I'll end with this little anecdotal story. It was about 30 years ago. I was visiting a friend in Los Angeles. I was doing a television special, and he was on vacation, so I was there. His family was with him. I had this house to myself, and it overlooked a lot of homes going down in Beverly Hills, so I could look down and see this whole wonderful landscape. And at nighttime, it was kind of magical because you saw the lights lit up. It was very quiet where I was. And one day, there was no fence, and the property line was just divided by a slope in a hill. In other words, we went down about 6 feet and 7 feet, and there was a neighbor's property began. In any case, this couple, it turned out they're a high-powered couple. One was a lawyer, one was a physician. They're telling this guy who looked, you know, very hippie-like, and his clothes, his hair, and very cool guy. And I could hear him. I was sitting out there sitting and writing, so I wasn't trying to eavesdrop, but they were talking very loud. They were very hyper. You know, we want this way, and we want that way, and we're going to be gone for 2 weeks. When we come back, you'll have it done? Yes, I'll have it done. You sure you're going to have it done? Yes. We're having a big party. You better have it done. So they left, and I'm watching the guy, and the guy says, did I see you on Regis Philbin? I said, yes. And so we had a conversation, and he was a very cool guy. But anyhow, all he did for the first week, he just hung out there and meditated. He didn't do a thing. He was meditating, which is something. That's that cooling lifestyle, right? That's that really mellow place. And from there, you see everything. And then he began to do his work. But just before he began to do his work, he got a call. And they were yelling at him, what do you mean you haven't started? He's, well, I'm conceptualizing everything. And they were very angry. And one of them, a neighbor or a friend came by and was yelling at him, you know, you're ripping us off, you're not doing your work. So he went ahead and he built this beautiful backyard garden. And he brought in some driftwood. He made a very meditative place. He dug out a koi pond. And it was just so beautiful. And it was finished the morning that the people came home. And then everyone came. Now, I was there when everyone came. Oh, look how beautiful this is. Oh, we brought this guy in. They had no clue of what he was going to do. But I just imagined in his mind being calm, focused, at ease, and doing what he saw was the right harmonizing of an environment to accent that environment and to bring it to a different level. And he did that. Would they appreciate him? I doubt it. They appreciated the fact that everyone was going, ooh, ah, but I didn't hear him thank him for what he brought. And in life, sometimes when people show up in our lives, if they don't look the same, act the same, or speak the same, or even think the same, it doesn't mean they shouldn't be there. It means they may remind us of what may be out of balance in our own life that we should reflect on. But to reflect, we even have to go to that cooling place, because anger, anxiety, frustration, vengeance, negativity, negative projections, blaming, all that is extreme heat. All that is extreme inflammatory. And biologically, when you get angry, your cytokines go up, your tumor necrosis factor increases. It really is a bad place to be. And yet we continue to wake up each day working at jobs we don't like, in environments that are not healthy for us, voting for people we know are the lesser of evils instead of the right person, like a Jill Stein or other, Rocky Anderson or Ralph Nader. We consistently make wrong choices because we're trapped in a belief system that we're honoring rather than honoring our spiritual self. As you said, all problems ultimately are spiritual problems. If you're not honoring the spiritual, you're creating an imbalance, and the imbalance is manifest. And I'll end with this thought. It was a Zen proverb that each day we should learn something new. That's knowledge and how to apply it. But also that Zen proverb says, and we should release something every day. That's wisdom. So if we can learn to release that which is toxic, that which is inflammatory, that which is bitter, that which is non-constructive, then we make room for that knowledge to be used in its place. If we think we can go through life, as you mentioned, working ourselves to death to have something that we thought we had that would make us happy, and then we get it and we're not happy, then we're highly inflammatory, our emotions are inflammatory, accusatory, negative, toxic, and then we die. So I appreciate what you've shared with us. I thank you very much, Brendan. All the best to you and to your helping other people.
Thanks for having me.
Brendan Kelly from Burlington, Vermont. His book is Yin and Yang of Climate Crisis. Very cool to bring together climate crisis and personal health. His website is personalasecological.com. Very shortly, in about 8 weeks, I'm going to be getting what is, in my opinion, going to be the most important, insightful energy sharing I've ever done. I'm going to help those people who are ready to change their lives, especially those who want to look at what they can do to slow down the aging process and reverse it, whether it's hair loss or skin damage or loss of libido or loss of energy or muscle mass or hormone imbalances or menopause or aging, whatever it is, with specific emphasis upon helping people with their brains, helping people with high blood pressure, helping people with diabetes, helping people who are overweight, and helping people who are depressed, and helping people who simply don't like how they are feeling today because of what choices they made in the past that have led them to age prematurely. We'll be meeting every two Saturdays, every other Saturday, for 3 months, starting in June. And if you want to join me, we are almost full. So you can call 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422, if you'd like to join me for our new and the only health support group I'll be doing for the next year. I'm putting a lot of new stuff into it. I have an audio clip that I think that you would appreciate hearing. Let's go to the audio clip of Smoke and Fumes. This is short, but it's very important.
This is a story of smoke and fumes. It's the story of how the world's most powerful industry used science, communications, and consumer psychology to shape the public debate over climate change. And it begins earlier, decades earlier, than anyone recognized. In 1968, a report commissioned by the oil industry detailed rising levels of CO2 in the atmosphere and warned industry leaders of potentially catastrophic climate risks: melting ice caps, rising sea levels, impacts to fisheries and agriculture, and environmental impacts on a global scale. The report noted uncertainties, but acknowledged that the basic science of climate change was sound and that fossil fuels were the most likely source of rising CO2 levels in the atmosphere. More importantly, it recognized that the most important remaining uncertainties were technological. How would we respond, and how would we modify our technology to reduce emissions? This was 1968, so the question becomes, what led the industry to this point, and what did they do with the information once they had it? We traced the genesis of this report to a meeting of oil and gas industry executives in Los Angeles in 1946. Faced with growing public concern about air pollution, the industry embarked on what would become a well-funded, carefully coordinated, multi-decade enterprise of funding scientific research and using that research to promote public skepticism of environmental regulations the industry considered hasty, costly, and potentially unnecessary. It named the enterprise the Smoke and Fumes Committee.
That's just to show you that they've known all along. So the next time you hear a Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or anyone else saying, well, you know, there is no such thing as global warming. Oh, yes, there is. But now you know why, with $500 million a year and a lot of scientists and personalities that they can influence with that money. They've known this for over 50 years, and they've lied and kept it from us. Tomorrow, by the way, I'm going to have a really phenomenal, interesting look at the sadistic side of runaway global capitalism and the urgent matters that humanity must face to survive. My guest will be Professor William Robinson, professor of sociology, University of California, and the author of Global Capitalism, The Crisis of Humanity. Plus, I'm going to deal with how the Clintons helped destroy Haiti and the end of the American empire. But not right now. And by the way, you can always listen over the telephone. So let me give you that number. And that number is 712-775-6850. 712-775-6850. So we'll have a powerful show tomorrow at noon. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.
You can kill a man with a bottle of poison or knife. I know you can't ever hurt him more to take his pride and ruin his life. Oh, this is a shame, girl.